Sin acknowledges and pays respect to the traditional owners of the land on which the Sin office and studios stand, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations. Sin also acknowledges and pays respect to the traditional owners of the lands our content reaches, as well as the radio stations we broadcast from across the country.
Welcome to Film 101, the show that looks at everything film, from the biggest new releases to awards hype to interviews with practitioners working on films, right through to our film recommendations. I am, of course, Arnie, and I am joined today by the voices that help shape the Film 101 podcast, Darcy and Tom. Great to have you both here today to talk more film after a long hiatus.
So it's very good to be with you again.
And again, we have been on a bit of a hiatus, as we've kind of briefly mentioned, in the last year and a half with all that's been happening in the world, and have each had our own new ventures come up in our lives, and that's, I guess, taken away from our time at the show. And obviously the fact that we've been at home, it's been difficult to get in the studio and record. However, we are excited to delve into some film talk as often as we can, even after all this time, and we hope to do so more in the near future as well. So I guess without further ado, we'll head into our first segment of the day. So we're basically just going to recap the first, 6 months of film in 2021, and some of the films we might have seen in 2020 that we didn't get to talk about, and our favorite films so far. So I guess that begs the question of, what was your guys' favorite film of 2021? Or 2020 even, from last year, that's carried over, because we've obviously gotten some releases from 2020 that we've seen in 2021 because of our theatrical schedule. So I guess what has been your guys' favorite film?
Well, 2020 is easy to answer for me, because my favorite film was Soul, the Pixar movie, and that was just above and beyond anything that was released last year or even this year so far. It was just such a really thoughtful, provoking, intelligent story. It's got the sheen, obviously, of a Disney Pixar movie, so you'd think it'd be intended towards children, but really it's a much more mature narrative than that. It's sort of, I guess the closest approximation would be The Tree of Life, except less pretentious. Soul is definitely one to watch, and if you haven't had an opportunity to see it already, I recommend everybody do. In terms of 2021 releases, I think Minari is probably the strongest. I thought it was a really slow and gentle movie to begin with, but that quickly shifts by the third act, and it becomes really powerful. Also, Judas and the Black Messiah, which was another Oscar nominee. It's really complex, really intelligently written. And the other one I wanted to give a shout out to was Mitchells vs. the Machines, which is a Sony movie released on Netflix. And, it's, in terms of its artistic style, it's really unlike any other animated movie of the past 10 years. And it's probably one of the funniest movies of the past 10 years as well. So, yeah, it's got some narrative shortcomings, but yeah, it's still pretty solid
though. I actually haven't seen that one yet. Does it have any sort of similarities to kind of Incredibles in that sense? Because that's obviously, it seems kind of like that sort of family get together sort of film.
I think the closest comparison is probably Zombieland.
Okay.
I'd go with that.
Yeah, because it has that road trip element, the bonding, the self-discovery kind of aspect to it as well. And for a first feature as well, that's such an interesting movie.
Absolutely.
That was probably the one movie of the first 6 months that I think this is the one 2021 movie. The one that actually stands out as being of this year and not being tied to last year's Oscars and stuff, which looking back actually was late April, so it feels weird that I always feel like the year starts after the Oscars end. And that's when you think of it. So there were so many 2020 movies that I lumped into.
Well, how do you got
2021 movies lumped into last year, The Father and Judas and Black Messiah.
Well, yeah, that's true. And Minari itself, that premiered at Sundance 18 months ago. It's had a really delayed release before getting its worldwide screening earlier in the year, of course.
That's one of the drawbacks of being in Australia, I guess, with the whole release schedule. We get everything quite late, which is unfortunate.
At the moment, though, it's slightly different because we're one of the few... Well, not right now, obviously, because half the country's in lockdown, but before that, we were one of the few countries which managed to evade, the mass... what's the word I'm looking for here? Sort of you know, there wasn't that widespread infection that we saw in places like the United States and the UK. Mm. So we were actually one of the few countries which were able to open up our cinemas and, you know, screen new releases. Mm. And, yeah, a lot of people around the world haven't had that luxury. So we are quite lucky in that regard.
Mm. I'd agree, yeah. What about you, Das? What films have stood out for you is the main thing to ask.
I think this year it's like, at least like for the first 6-7 months of the year, it's definitely been like a limited series, like TV kind of focus for me. Like, I think like the standouts for me have been Underground Railroad and It's a Sin. I think they're just like the two just like stories that I found the most engaging compared to any movie I've seen, really. But as we're not a limited series TV podcast, it's probably not worth diving into at this point. I think it's probably like In the Heights and like The Father are probably the two standouts in terms of like movies I've seen in theaters this year. Like, they've just been like the most like affecting true movies I've watched, and I know both of you have seen those, yeah, and both like really really liked it.
I actually haven't seen In the Father yet, unfortunately. I have not seen it yet. So I've been meaning to, but yeah, I completely missed that whole like chunk when it was out in cinemas. But I have seen In the Heights, which I also think is probably my favorite film of the year. And I've kind of mentioned here that I think it's not only entertaining, but you know, a wholesome film as well. It's also a film that kind of is able to truly juggle really relevant issues like discrimination, separation, gentrification, all the nations, whilst still retaining kind of the gusto that musicals have or give. And, you know, I haven't really experienced that with, because I'm not an avid watcher of musicals, but when I think of, like, the musicals that stand out to me, it'd be like something like The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, you know, that was so profound and I think moving and really challenging in terms of that genre. Whereas you kind of get a lot of these, like, sort of musicals that we've really gotten in the last maybe 10, 20 years, like, you know, say for, like, the odd, you know, La La Land or something like that, they've been really sort of, they haven't really pushed the genre to new heights, and I think that's what made In the Heights really stand out for me. I also think that it's paced really well, which, you know, you often hear about pacing and people talk about pacing, but I think it's through, like, the fact that it has, like, a clear direction that we're able to have that kind of nice pacing, because, you know, each musical sequence and number adds value to kind of what follows or the next musical number that comes, as opposed to just being like, oh, okay, like, we're going to the next best thing and that's it, you know?
Well, I think that's why, like, why the history of, like, musicals are, like, they're all long movies.
Mm.
Whereas, like, Sound of Music's, like, 2.5 hours, West Side Story, I think, is, like, 2.5 as well. Like, I think by having, like, all the musical kind of things breaking up every kind of section of the movie, you can, like, the pacing, yeah, as you were saying, is always feels propulsive, even when you're like realizing it's a 150-minute movie. When you like look at like action movies, because I've always kind of compared action movies and musicals, because I think like theoretically they are the same thing. But like you look at even like Nobody and that sort of action movie that came out, and you're like, you kind of appreciate that's 50 minutes shorter than In the Heights is.
Yeah, because you don't
think about it, like that's like almost an entire hour extra. But like, you think about a movie like Nobody and you're like, if that was 2.5 hours, like, how am I feeling at the end of that?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you never really get a sense of time when you're watching In the Heights. It almost just feels really like flows really nicely, you know, because I feel like nothing is everything kind of it adds the kind of everything that follows. It's not like, oh, we're gonna get another kind of a large item number that's kind of really monotonous or just sitting there out of place, you know?
Or like you're just waiting for the next massive musical number to happen and you're just kind of like not really caring about the in-between scenes.
Exactly, yeah. Which I think a lot of musicals have missed, you know, particularly something like Hairspray comes to mind, for instance, the most recent one that they did. I don't even know how many years ago that was. It was a fair few years.
2007 was its release.
Something like that. But, like, no one remembers that film, you know?
Some of us do. Said a lot.
It's a remake, right? It's like, it was an original, and then that's kind of like the remake to the original, as far as I know, or something like that. Yeah. I guess we've mentioned our favourite sort of films so far. Do we have any underwhelming films of 2021 that maybe we kind of had high hopes for and they let us down for whatever reason?
Not the high hopes as such, but I remember going to a screening of The Dry earlier in the year. So this was January of 2021. Everyone had just come out of lockdown. There was a lot of hype around the film, a lot of critical praise, and it's done really well at the box office as well. I think it's the highest grossing movie anywhere in the world that's been released in 2021.
Okay.
So yeah, that was my understanding. But yeah, I watched it and I thought I didn't have high expectations or anything, but I thought to myself, this is a fine movie, but people are making it out to be something that it's not. Like, you know, it's really professionally made, but there's nothing that really stands out about the movie, I felt. And the ending especially, it's so far-fetched that unless you've read the book, you're going to be completely blindsided by it. So, yeah, The Dry, it's a good Australian movie, but it's not up there with the best of Australian cinema. So, yeah.
That's fair. What about you, Das?
I think the Tom Clancy movie, Without Remorse, that Salima directed with Michael B. Jordan.
It
was a movie like I probably shouldn't have had high hopes for, but I think because of Salima's limited series 000 he made last year, that I just thought that like he was a much better filmmaker than kind of like what that movie ended up being, where it was just a regular like Navy SEAL wartime action movie with like zero charisma, with like quite nice set pieces, because he also made the Sicario Day of the Soldado sequel.
Which
there are so many like good elements to that, and then like when you watch 000, you notice like it has those elements with just like really good writing, really good like setting. So that's filmed in like 7 different countries. It's a really good thing to watch, but yeah, just. It just nothing ever came together to be actually that interesting or innovative. That you need, especially for like a modern action movie.
Yeah, and I think someone, I can't remember which critic it was, but they said it's just like a Jack Ryan movie of the 90s, but they haven't done anything to update it. I mean, they've just cast Michael B. Jordan, and yet they haven't really done anything with him. I mean, the previous movies, they had like Harrison Ford in them, who's a very charismatic actor, and before that you had Sean Connery and Alec Baldwin in the lead roles, and both of them, they have character.
What's the surprising part of Michael B. Jordan being cast with like one of the most like naturally charismatic actors we have, and then he's just not being used in that way at all, the same way like Harrison Ford was.
Yeah, so I think Without Remorse is probably going to be one of those movies that plays on 7 flicks or 9 go like 3 or 4 years from now at 10:30 at night. So, yeah, it's a bit of a disappointing.
For me, it'd be, I'll put here Voyages. I was trying to think, was there anything that was really underwhelming for me this year? And that's the one that really stood out. I guess it wasn't so much that I had high expectations for it. I guess it's more the fact that Neil Burgess' sort of films often revolve, revolve around characters who find themselves in difficult circumstances. But they're usually quite, exhilarating and interesting. Whereas here, most of the film falls apart, be it for the, whether it's the inexperienced cast or the poorly written script, which is really kind of campy, but not in the way that you want it. Kind of like, when I think of like something like Wes Craven's Scream films, they kind of have that nice balance of humor with, it's kind of that campy humor, but with the horror elements, and it ends up being so iconic. But it's just not the case yet. It's like, or it could just be the fact that this is one of the few occasions where Berger has only directed as opposed to having written the screenplay as well. So I don't know whether that factored into anything or not. But I remember, seeing that with you, Das. Tom, you went at the screening, unfortunately, but I know Darcy was. And I remember me and Das just consistently kind of like looking at each other like at point through the film, kind of like, is this really happening? Like,
there were so many just like strange choices that just like, I felt like they just needed some like, a random like stock footage of was like animals killing each other, and it just felt like they just needed to like pad time onto like an 88-minute movie. very concerning.
Or just kind of like the alien entity aspect that they were alluding to but quickly threw out the window. Like I feel like even that would have sort of grounded that film a bit more, because it's hard to get a space film right, or a film that's kind of just revolving around the interior of a shuttle and kind of relying on a cast that's, again, inexperienced to kind of drive that. Like, you need those added elements, I guess, to keep you engaged. If the performances aren't up to par, which I thought was the case with Voyages.
Yeah, definitely.
So are there any films that we're most looking forward to this year?
Well, I'll let Darcy start because he stole most of my choices.
Well, like I tried to just limit it to movies that we were supposed to see last year, but were all delayed 12 months. And it's been interesting, I think, to see the movies that have come out so far that were supposed to release last year and actually performing really well at the box office. So I feel like a lot of those like distributors are feeling pretty good about waiting 12 months. So yeah. I think the movie's still looking forward to is like No Time to Die, The French Dispatch, and Last Night in Soho. Those are the three. I think they're all pretty much going to come out in like 6 weeks of each other here.
I in the US, I know that Dune, French Dispatch, and Last Night are all coming out on the exact same day. So it's going to be really hard for American audiences to decide what to see that day.
Which.
What would you double feature out of that?
Well, I reckon June's a really long movie, or at least it's going to be like 3 hours or so. So it'll be French Dispatch and Last Night in Soho. And I'd reckon I'd see...
And they're like...
Yeah, go on.
Sorry,
you go. No, you go.
No, it's like they're just like wildly different movies as well.
Well that's the thing. I'm wondering, which would I watch first? Would I watch the horror movie first or second? Because then Wes Anderson's movie acts as a sort of palate cleanser.
That's what I was going to mention. Probably Wes Anderson's movie doesn't really fit into with those two. Though I'm really looking forward to his because he hasn't done. You know, the last thing he did was it was that stop motion sort of thing. Isle of Dogs. That's the one. So that's the last thing he did. And obviously, yeah, like you mentioned, Dune is almost 3 hours long. But is it coming out alongside those films now with that delay that it's got, or with delay pushed it beyond or?
I think it was
The delay.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, the delay pushed it into October.
Oh, okay.
We're waiting at the end of September.
Okay, right. So with those two films, what about you, Tom? Do you have any films that you're anticipating or looking forward to?
Well, The French Dispatch is probably the one I'm most looking forward to, but a couple of the others that I've got my eye on are Spider-Man No Way Home. Of all the Marvel movies that are coming, it's intriguing to me because they're doing all the Spider-Man films and they're bringing Doctor Strange in, or, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch's character. So, yeah, that is going to be really interesting, I reckon. And you've got John Watts returning as director as well, who did Homecoming and Far From Home. And I love Homecoming so much. It's probably my favourite of the Marvel movies that have been released. And a couple of the others are Top Gun Maverick. I remember seeing a trailer for this in IMAX and just being absolutely in awe. So, yeah, that's probably going to be a good one. And then the new Ghostbusters movie as well, Afterlife, just because, you know, it looks really charming and fun.
There's something about that Ghostbusters movie. I'm just so curious by a son directing like a sequel to his father's movie. That's just like the most interesting. I don't know if that's actually happened before. Like, that's something I'd like to look into. It's just such an interesting dynamic.
Ivan Reitman's the original director. His son Jason, who did Juno and Up in the Air and all these other movies, is the director for this one. And Jason said he approaches this as the world's first and foremost fan of Ghostbusters. So, yeah, he knows what he's doing with the material.
Well, there you go. Well, he's got some good cast.
That's another thing that intrigues me about the movie is the cast, because you've got Carrie Coon, you've got Paul Rudd in there, and you've also got Tracy Letts, who we all remember from Ford v Ferrari and Little Women, among other movies. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with that big-name cast.
Returning cast members
from the first two Ghostbusters movie, or the ones that, you know, aren't dead, they're all planning on making appearances in this one.
Okay, that's good. That's nice to hear. Yeah, I saw a video of Bill Murray being he was shown like a clip from the film with
Stay Puffed
ghost thing or whatever, and it's kind of like it's kind of like in the aisles, and he was genuinely laughing, which is something you don't really see. Like, I was seeing him laughing at that, and I'm like, okay, Bill Murray is kind of, you know, excited, then I'm going to be excited as well. So. For me, I think I put here probably Annette. That's a big film starring Adam Driver and Marion Cotillard. I think written by the Sparks Brothers, if I'm correct. That's like the screenplay.
Yeah. They're going to have a big year of
It's their year.
Getting a documentary made about them. Edgar Wright.
Yeah, I couldn't think of a better honor than having a documentary by Edgar Wright.
So that's definitely one, and I've also put here Coganada's sci-fi drama After Yang. Obviously, I was a big fan of this Columbus film, as I know some of you guys were as well. So that's definitely one to keep an eye out for. I've also put, I think my most anticipated film is PTA's Soggy Bottom. I'm still not sure if that's the official title, but I think they're going with it, but I don't know. but that's probably my most anticipated release, and hopefully it sticks to the late release it's supposed to get this year. And also, as we've kind of mentioned, Dune from Denis Villeneuve. I guess he just hasn't stepped a foot wrong, and I'm keen to see how he adapts this, you know, especially after David Lynch's sort of culty first.
Yeah, coming back to the Paul Thomas Anderson movie, my understanding is that Soggy Bottom was the working title, but it may end up being a Jackie Chan situation where he just likes the working title so much he just sticks with it. Because in the past he did Project A and Police Story, and the reason why he gave the projects those titles was so that people wouldn't like copy his movies, because there was a period in Hong Kong where Jackie Chan would do a movie and then several other studios would, you know, leap upon, you know, the popularity of that movie and just make the same film. So Jackie said, tell you what, if we just given like a nondescript vague title, then nobody could possibly copy us. It did, true.
Hey, and it turned out well for him, you know. Perfect. So I think that we're going to go into a little break before we come back for our second segment.
You're listening to the Film 101 podcast on Sin.
So we're going to head into our second segment for the day, our final segment, and we're going to be doing the week that was in cinema, or, you know, aspects of the year that was in cinema as well, because it obviously was an eventful year, but there's a lot to cover. So I thought I'd just narrow it down to kind of the things that are most relevant at the moment, or the latest news, I guess. So I guess to start us off, this news has actually been around for a month or so, but I thought it was important, given that it is an ongoing story. Pixar believes that Disney basically devalued the worth of Luca, their new animation film, by not making it a premier access title like Cruella, Lion, the Last Dragon, and Mulan before it, seeing as it didn't get a theatrical release schedule. Now, the same thing happened with Soul, and the issue seems to be that Pixar believe Disney don't view their films as being good enough for an upcharge, which personally I don't think is true, and that these films would have no revenue return potential. I guess this is given the current situation, I'd imagine, but I also don't think that is true. Now, the argument for Disney making films of diversity free while charging a cost for their own films seems to have a bit more weight when inclusivity is a factor. I just wanted to see what you guys thought of this, because obviously we're going to be getting Black Widow soon, and that's also going to be getting an extra charge on top of a theatrical release. So what do you guys think of Pixar's kind of, issue with Disney making their films, I guess, just free? Obviously, it's not exactly free, seeing as you still need to pay for a Disney subscription if you're not subscribed to Disney, so there is a fee involved, but I guess the aspect of that upcharge not being there. What do you guys make of that?
Well, I look at it this way. One of the motivating factors of me getting my own Disney Plus account was that Soul was made free on the platform. And my understanding was the reason why Disney did that was because they did the you know, premium access with Mulan, and they didn't get many people taking up the offer. So they thought, if we make Soul free available to everybody, that will give people an incentive to join our streaming service. But, of course, there are other Disney movies this year, like Cruella, as you mentioned, Black Widow. They will be getting the premiere access treatment. But Luca, yeah, it kind of, to me, does feel like a devaluing, because this is a really good movie. It's getting a lot of good reviews. And while it's not as strong as Soul is, you know, it's still great. My concern, though, is that they opted not to put it in theatres at all. I don't think that's really fair on people who don't have Disney Plus or can't afford Disney Plus. And it's not fair on the distributors either, because I know that I was really keen on seeing Soul in a theatre last year and I didn't get to in the end. But it's taking revenue away from the, you know, the theatres, and so that was my concern with it.
Yeah, I think, I feel like that's much more the story than the premium access thing. So I'm not sure, entirely sure how the premium access works in terms of the creators getting the revenue that, like, that little bump is getting compared to the overall Disney Plus, like, streaming deal would be. Because I guess it becomes, like, a really interesting question of how does, like, being able to show it to as many people as possible on their service is compared to, like, the premium access, like Cruella, those sort of movies that you have to pay the entire month, like an extra month, basically, of a streaming service to watch it once if you don't have access to it at a movie theater.
Well, it's actually an extra 2 months. So you pay 2 months worth of streaming just to watch this one movie. I mean, it makes...
I think it's three, actually.
Oh, it is close to three, actually, which it makes financial sense, say, if you've got a large family or you live out in the middle of nowhere and you can't afford to travel into town to go to the cinema. But if you live in Melbourne or where my parents are in Bendigo and where they're within walking distance of the cinema, you know, it's not really worth the expense.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is as well, you know, the cost, when we kind of look at it, obviously some people maybe would prefer to watch it from home, you know, as a family, you know, you're on your couch, whatever, you can make your own popcorn, you save expenses in that regard. Plus you pay whatever, I don't know, what's $30 Australian or $35 Australian to watch a film that, you know, as a family pass, you probably pay, I guess, another $30 on top of that. So there's that aspect as well, which I think has been good with the premium access titles. Obviously, you can't really compare it to the theatrical aspect. I think in terms of Pixar's concern, you know, I think the theatrical part of Pixar's concern would, you know, is valid, seeing as, like, some of Disney's biggest distributed films have been, like, look at Incredibles 2, like, that's obviously a Pixar film, and that made over, like, I think it made over $1 billion, like, it was insane, it did. And I think, like, is Inside Out a Pixar film as well? Like, that's, I think a
that
lot
is
of those,
as well.
Yeah, a lot, like,
that... Yep. Came close. I think that was like 800, 900 million worldwide in the end.
But regardless, like, some of the biggest, you know, Pixar, Disney, I guess, distributed films are Pixar titles, you know, when you compare it to their ones. So I don't know why they wouldn't give it a theatrical run as well. Like, I'm sure the expense wouldn't, like, it'd be covered with how many people would want to see that in the cinema. So, but again, like you mentioned, Tom, like, part of the reason of you getting the Disney thing was because, Soul ended up being free, so I guess that's an incentive to probably draw people into their streaming service as well, whether that's how they're operating it or not. I don't know. I think that was just an interesting topic. It'll be interesting to see how it kind of fares in the near future as more Pixar titles get made and whether they continue with that same aspect. You know, if they do end up getting a theatrical run, will they end up being free on the service, or will they end up getting an upcharge? You know, as things kind of start to get back to normal.
Yeah, I think given the way things are going in the United States, because I think it's 55-60% of their population is vaccinated now, you would expect that more theatres would be opening and Disney would be pushing more towards those theatrical releases. And I think they only said, well, they said there would only be a short-term thing anyway, because once the pandemic does subside, then there's really no reason for them to be putting their Pixar movies exclusively on Disney Plus, because, you know, like you've been saying, Arnie, they make money and they make a lot of money, so it makes more sense to put them in the theater.
It does. I guess it's unless they want to keep their viewer base, you know, for Disney Plus, the subscribers, if they want to keep going with that model of having maybe a film or two free every once in a while, you know, for people or as an incentive to kind of stay with the service. But yeah, time will tell with that one, I think.
Well, it's basically what HBO Max is in America, like their whole plan was basically, like, their way of getting more people to subscribe there is to use the 2021 release schedule of Warner movies to make that basically, like, the staple of their streaming service for all of this year.
Yeah, and so I guess if,
like, Disney decides to kind of go down that road, as you were saying.
I also guess there's another element to it in that, you know, most regular folk, you know, aside from people who are avid moviegoers and that, like, most regular folk, they'll go maybe see one or two films a year max at the cinema. And, you know, being with a streaming service, if you're paying $10 a month or $15 a month, that service ends up getting more money than had that family gone to kind of see one film a year, you know? So there's that incentive to keep them there as well, you know? Like, once you kind of get hooked onto a streaming service, it's hard to it's hard to go off, you know.
And you want to get your money's worth as well. I mean, if you're paying X amount of money to for this service every month, then, you know, you'd want to be watching every single series, movie, and what have you that appears on there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess a lot of people don't, you know, but that should be the idea, but it's not, unfortunately, so... So the next point is, obviously we mentioned this briefly before in the last segment, but Dune got pushed back by another 3 weeks as Warner kind of adjusted their release schedule. How do we kind of feel about this? You know, obviously COVID and that is still kind of quite present and whatnot, but is this just a matter of Warner wanting to, you know, make sure that the timing is right for the film?
I think Dune probably represents the biggest risk for Warner Brothers out of any movie they're releasing this year, because we've mentioned it's near 3 hours long, but also it's directed by Denis Villeneuve, who, well, Blade Runner 2049, that was a box office bomb, so yeah, already his name's somewhat box office poison, but yeah, well, on top of that though, like, the Dune fans are really niche. I mean, it's not like a Harry Potter or a Lord of the Rings where everybody's into it. The people who read Dune are a very, very small section of the community, and even smaller still, the people who appreciated the miniseries and the David Lynch movies. So even though it's got this big cast behind it and they're putting a lot of money into the marketing, I really can't see at this stage how they expect Dune to do well at the box office, unfortunately.
I was wondering as well, like, what their expectations are for it to do well. Because, like, yeah, I think Denis has such, like, an interesting relationship to the box office, and, like, he's one of the most, like, revered modern filmmakers, and, like, he's making nothing but either, like, adapted works of other people's things. They're either making, like, like small-ish movies, like Sicario, I don't think was that large a budget a movie. Like, I don't think it did exceptionally well, but it wasn't like a blockbuster, like Fast 9 level action movie.
But that's a film that did really well with critics and with, like, film buffs, but beyond that, it hasn't really gained traction within the wider community.
Yeah, like, I don't think there should, like, I think in, like, actual, like, filmmaking thing, he's basically the same as Christopher Nolan, but then I think you have to ask the question of, why do Christopher Nolan movies make $600 million and Denis Villeneuve's movies don't? I think that's a really interesting question to ask.
Well, I think Christopher Nolan, I hate to say it, but Christopher Nolan at this point is pretty much riding off the coattails of The Dark Knight, because that's everyone associates him with.
So, yeah, so isn't the argument that then, like, Denis is just trying to find his Dark Knight?
More or less.
Well, he arguably has, in terms of how good Blade Runner 2049 was, but I also think that there's the aspect that Christopher Nolan's name is just become more known. I don't think anyone knows who's behind, save for maybe big film fans. I don't think anyone knows who's behind Sicario and Blade Runner 2049 and Arrival. It's just like, oh, they were great films, but they don't really know people don't know who kind of directed it. Whereas it's like, oh, you've seen Inception, like, it's like, oh, that was a great Nolan film or whatever, like.
And the other thing is as well, Nolan's got those traits about him. He's like Tarantino or Scorsese or someone like that. He's got these motifs in his filmography that everybody can recognise, whereas I think Denny doesn't really have that as of yet.
Yeah, he doesn't, like, play into the auteur tropes of, nothing's actually, like, director-focused, nothing really makes you only consider his, like, involvement and stuff in the same way Nolan and Tarantino do.
And I think people will eventually recognize him for certain aspects. It's just, I think he's still trying to find what his signature is. You know, it doesn't happen over the course of 5 years, you know. So I think that we've still got a lot to see from him, and hopefully hopefully he does attract, you know, big box office numbers, because it'd be a shame if studios weren't putting him in the front seat to make readapt, I guess, popular works.
Yeah, because then it's likely he will just go to TV, like a lot of filmmakers do it. Like, because I think, like, Dune, like, it would almost make a lot more sense to be a limited series or, like, a... especially for, like, sci-fi being, like, one of the main things that, like, streaming services are making. Now, things like The Expanse, those sort of properties. Like, Apple just spent, like, an absurd amount of money making The Foundation, which is, like, a niche Isaac Asimov sci-fi movie book that, like, is, like, considered one of the most unadaptable things that's ever existed. Like, it spans, like, actual thousands of years.
in like the book series. Like, how do you make this a TV show?
So I was actually having a conversation. Sorry for cutting you off, Darcy. I was actually having a conversation with a friend of mine, and this was several months ago before the pandemic, and they were saying how they can't watch a 2 or 3 hour movie because it's just so long, and yet they'll happily watch a TV series and watch 10 episodes of it, even though it goes on for longer than a movie would, because you've got those little breaks in between which serve as the end point, and you say, oh yeah, I could do another and another and another.
Yep.
Whereas, yeah, in a movie like Dune, obviously, you're just sitting there going, when is this going to end, please?
That's the beauty of, I guess,
do we just need culture. Do we just need, like, intermissions back in movies?
I think we do. I actually, but before the lockdown happened, that's just happened here in Australia, I actually got to see a screening of 2001 A Space Odyssey in IMAX, which was incredible. And they put the intermission in there, and a lot of the audience were actually, you know, quite receptive towards it, because it gave them the opportunity to get up and about, stretch their legs, you know, run and grab another drink. So, yeah, I think that the intermission is something that we could definitely be incorporating back into the cinema experience.
Because, like, yeah, because the whole idea of, like, yeah, where the intermission came from is, like, the travelling roadshow movie thing, which I feel like is where we're kind of getting into in terms of, like, blockbuster event movies being the main thing. So I don't see why we couldn't, yeah, put in the middle of Endgame just a nice little break to let us think what just happened, what's going to happen.
And also the mood in that intermission was just electric as well. You always hear people saying, you know, talking about their favourite scenes and discussing it, even though it's not finished yet. So yeah, bring back the intermission, I say.
Well, there you go.
Favourite intermissions, because when Tarantino made The Hateful Eight, and like that release, like he wanted to like build up the old travelling roadshow aspect, and like that movie is so split in half in terms of like, this is the first half, there's an intermission, the second half becomes an Agatha Christie thing with a narration explaining what just happened, and it's, plays in that really interesting way. I can see, like, Knives Out 2 doing it, basically.
Oh, I hope so.
Also, apparently, Vin Diesel confirmed that Fast and Furious 10 and 11 will begin shooting in January of 2022. Do we want more Fast and Furious films?
No.
I mean, someone does. They're, like, they're making them indefinitely. I just wonder at what point, like, does Vin Diesel stop? Because, like, he's been such, like, the driving force of most of the movies he makes.
There's only been 2 Fast and Furious movies where he hasn't appeared in it. Well, one, actually, technically, where he hasn't appeared in it at all. So, yeah, it's just at this point the franchise has gotten so silly and it's deviated so far from what the original film was about that I just lost interest in the franchise entirely. So, yeah. Just too goofy for me, unfortunately.
That's fair. I guess I'll have to come back to that point after I actually watch Fast and Furious 9.
I feel like I appreciate them. They've driven, like, I'm going to use the word driven just because I could. they've moved into, like, the campness of, like, where the series ended up. Like, yeah, the first one is probably the only one that it was about very small-scale crimes being committed driving fast cars. And now it's basically akin to, it's less John Wick gone in 60 seconds and much more a Marvel movie.
Very much so. And the problem is as well, the films, they've become self-aware and it's almost like aggressively self-aware as well, because in the new movie, Tyrese Gibson, he makes like a dozen comments about, you know, how many ludicrous missions they've been on, how close they've come to death, and it's just like, come on, guys, we know. Just move on.
That's straight out of the Marvel formula, you know? That's what they do. Like, Jeremy Renner will point out something like absurd that you just... Mm. And it's just like, yeah, the self-awareness has just become, like, it's poking fun at itself, you know? That you can do that tastefully, but I feel like it's becoming something that we're just noticing more and more in film, that it's like, you know, We understand that you guys know that your film's not that great.
Well, I've noticed it's not only happening more often in films, but they've also, like, more blatant about it. I mean, you think back to something like The Simpsons. It was very smart with the way it delivered, like, its self-referential jokes. Whereas now every movie thinks it's Deadpool and they just blatantly look at the camera and say, hey, aren't we clever? We're being self-aware. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, I didn't even like her in Deadpool. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Another Vin Diesel thing, he's also confirmed that Riddick 4 script is finished and will begin shooting in Australia soon.
Oh,
Yeah, Vin Diesel being like the primary driver of his movie. He owns the rights to like the Riddick franchise, like him specifically. So it's like completely up to him whether that series keeps going.
I just think it's hilarious though, because nobody has asked for sequels to Riddick, let alone three of them. So,
but that's part of the Vin Diesel charm, is that like he will forcibly make these things whether you want them or not.
Well, it's been 8 years since the last one, so you know he's gonna run these into the ground, and that's when we're gonna be sick of them. Also, Harrison Ford injured his shoulder while filming Indiana Jones 5. Is it time to hang up the fedora and whip?
Well, it's not plane related, so like I'm happy.
but he's had a lot of bad luck, Harrison, because I think he broke his ankle on the set of The Force Awakens, and now on the set of New Indiana Jones 5. Yeah, he's done himself a shoulder injury, but I'm honestly at the point where I think Harrison Ford is getting too old, and even a few years back when they were teasing the idea that Chris Pratt could star in like a rebooted Indiana Jones franchise, I would actually be all for that. I'd be interested just for them to go back to the 1930s and have more of those, you know, serial-like adventures where they just went off to some exotic location and found some, you know, weird totem. And, you know, that's what Indiana Jones, I think, should be all about. And I don't know why Spielberg and Lucas want to keep revisiting it.
I mean, it's an interesting thought. Obviously, like with Chris Pratt, as you mentioned, I feel like he would be a good fit, basically just thinking of the new Jurassic Park or World films or whatever they are, even though they're not that great, like I feel like he's a real personality, and I think he really, like, you know, Harrison Ford as well is obviously such a major kind of icon personality that he made that his own. I think Chris Pratt could do it in a similar way without kind of ruining the tastefulness of those original ones. Tarantino also recently mentioned on Bill Mayer's show that he thought about doing a reboot of sorts of Reservoir Dogs as his 10th and final film, but he reassured viewers and fans that he wouldn't. Now, would we have liked to see this? Do we think it would have fared well as a reboot today, or is the film really specific for the time it was released?
I don't know how he'd go about doing the reboot, because, you know, Reservoir Dogs, it's constantly cited as Tarantino's best movie by multiple critics and commentators, so yeah, if they were to remake the movie, you know, it'd be like that remake of Psycho that they did in the 90s. You know, it'd just be like, the original was fine. What's the point?
That's fair.
I feel like, because he's touring around at the moment, the novelization of his last movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So I feel like if he was going to redo it or, like, re-enter that world, it would be, like, as a novel. Like, that would at least be a more interesting way for him to do it.
I'd agree, yeah. Also, Don Cheadle has mentioned that Steven Soderbergh is apparently considering an Ocean's 14 film. Now, would revisiting the movie star movies and Danny Ocean be a good idea?
Well, Darcy is the Steven Soderbergh fan here, so I think he should be the one person who, yeah, speaks on behalf of all of us.
I'm in on anything he makes. I would find it interesting to, like, return to the Oceans franchise with where Brad Pitt's at. Just in terms of, like, true. Brad Pitt is a very different actor, I think, than he was in, like, the early 2000s when the Oceans franchise kind of came off.
And yeah, like, that's fair.
Yeah, I feel like that aspect of, like, alone would make it a more interest, like, at least worth revisiting.
That's fair.
And, yeah, and, like, they need to do it before, like, Elliot Gould dies, seeing as, like, Carl Reiner has passed, and Bernie Mac as well since the last movie.
Well, yeah, that's another aspect that I think Soderbergh mentioned in the article I read, that you know, it's going to be interesting kind of trying to decide where to take, if they were to do an Ocean's 14, where to take it, knowing that a lot of cast and that have died, and, like, you know, how they kind of integrate all of this and where they kind of take it without, you know, especially given the time that's been since that last film. And finally, I guess to cap off things, with MIP having its full program launch on the 13th of July, just a couple of weeks from now, are we hoping to see any particular titles when the program is released?
Oh, well, there is one from anime director Mamoru Hosada, which I'm very keen for. It's Belle. It's co-animated by the Irish studio behind Secret of Kells and Wolfwalkers and all those other movies there. His last film, Mirai, had also premiered at that year's Melbourne International Film Festival, so I have a suspicion that he's going to do the same thing with his new film this year.
Okay.
Oh, I'm so excited for that. Yeah, nice. I had no idea. Yeah, I think like a lot of like the Khan movies I'm really hoping show up, mainly Annette. I think Annette would be a great opening or closing, especially because it's like a musical that's like going to be quite outlandish. I think it would be like a great opening or closing night movie.
That's fair. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, with Niv coming up and with obviously more films coming out in the second half of this year, we're going to have plenty more to come back to and hopefully talk about. Again, this was almost just like a little kind of get together, kind of just to you know, see where we're all at and how we're all faring in terms of, you know, the films that we've seen this year and our recollections of films we've seen this year. So it's been good kind of catching up with you guys again after quite a while. You know, we haven't done this, I think, since February of last year. So, again, there's been plenty of films, plenty of film news. We can't cover it all in the time it's given to us today, but hopefully we can revisit more of it in the near future. And again, you know, great to have you both on today, you know, Tom and Darcy, and hopefully we can all do this again sometime soon.
Yes, indeed. Things are looking bright and rosy right around the world. So, yeah, it's only a matter of time before the three of us can be in a room together again. And Arnie, Darcy, it's always a pleasure. So, thank you.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys.